Can you guys hear me in the back? Can you hear me okay? Okay. Well, this final presentation is on resource modeling, so I'll try to tie back all the previous components talked about by the other presenters and kind of see how it all fits in the integrated resource plan and how we use those components in the resource modeling process. So I'll just try to provide a basic overview of resource modeling process and again how it is used in the integrated resource plan, or IRP. And for this resource modeling process, you need to have software, a specific tool. I mean, there are a myriad of combinations that you could select from in order to meet that need. So you need a tool. So I'll go through the software criteria necessary for modeling. I'll identify and describe some of the modeling inputs, kind of the big ticket drivers. I'll provide an example of some of the model output that we're seeing. And then how we could incorporate risk modeling as part of the resource modeling process. And lastly, just kind of tied in back to the integrated resource plan, how the utility develops a preferred plan. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it. So what is the role of resource modeling in the development of the integrated resource plan? So as talked about earlier by Matt, he identified that utility creates a load forecast. And as part of that load forecast, there's utility recognizes the need for some resources way out into the future. We talked about 20-year load forecast. I&M, for example, goes out 30 years. It's just specific on each utility. But you identify the need going forward. And to fulfill that need, you need resources. And this could be talked about or resources like supply and demand side, like those covered by Scott in his presentation. And it's important to recognize that these resources each have a unique cost and energy profile. And of course, what you ultimately select in your plan is based on what you put into the model in the form of input scenarios and sensitivities. Those again discussed by Ted earlier in his presentation. So the goal of resource modeling is to identify the best combination of resources that meets the customer's requirements at the least reasonable cost. So then model output then is used to inform utility decision makers in the development of a preferred portfolio of resources. So resource modeling tools provide two major functions. The first is the production costing function, and this is the cost, the monetization of cost, converting fuel and capturing variable and fixed costs to produce energy. Fuel like coal, gas, uranium, and oil, and then some variable components like consumables, some of those chemical reagents to minimize emission effluents coming out of the model like lime, anhydrous ammonia, sodium bicarbonate, and sodium bicarbonate. So the other major function of resource modeling tool is the resource planning function, and I'll also refer to this as the expansion planning portion of it. And it is a development of a resource plan that balances least cost objectives and incorporates planning flexibility, adaptability to risk, and conforms with applicable NERC and RTO criteria. And part incorporated in this resource planning function is also some production costing characteristics. So we'll move into, so you need a tool, and this tool is going to have some sort of purpose. In this case, we refer to it as the objective function. So what is the objective function? So the most widely used objective function in the industry is a minimization of present value, a forward-looking cost, capital and production cost. So what does this mean? If we can kind of look at this graph here, we see that we have a capital cost line and a production cost line. So we can envision that this graph here represents all the possible combinations of resources to meet your need. So for example, on the far left here, this line here can represent a peak plan that has low capital cost but high production cost, like a plan that might be heavy with peaking units, like those talked about by Scott earlier. Where on the opposite end of the spectrum, you can have a plan that is capital cost intensive and associated low production cost. For example, a plan that has large-scale wind, solar, or even the extreme, like a nuclear unit. So what the objective function is to find a balance between these two components and select a plan that falls somewhere here in the middle, as we could identify here as plan A. This is called the optimal plan coming out of the tool. So what kind of tools are available out there for this process? Well, here I've identified some of the tools that are used in the industry. There are tools that perform both the production costing and resource modeling functions. Those tools are System Optimizer, Strategist, and Plexos. Then you also have those tools that only serve the production costing function, like GenTrader and ProMod. So what criteria is necessary for selecting your tool? First, I'll talk about the market-based commitment and dispatch. Market-based commitment and dispatch capability. Well, there's been a change in the industry where at one point each utility was responsible for serving its own load, kind of morphed into this whole participation in the RTOs. So now instead of you serving your own load, basically you bid your units into this RTO and they dispatch your units for you. So your tool should also be able to easily model emission limited dispatch. For example, you want to be able to isolate the amount of, or to comply with rules like password. You want to be able to set a limit to your emissions coming out of the unit either by region or by generator. Your tool should also have a friendly user and output interface. So I personally have experience using two of the tools highlighted in the previous graph. And I can tell you from my personal experience that the transition between one and the other was made easier because they had similar graphic user interfaces. I mean, they weren't identical, but the properties were kind of all there. The terminology was different, and definitely the engine behind the model, but the graphic user interface was very similar. Lastly, your tool should have responsive user support. So with changes in market, technologies, and regulations, you want to be able to use your tool the effective way possible, and usually we have to rely on user support for that. So if you selected a tool, now you need input information to populate your tool. So I'll just go over some of the major inputs used in the tools, and I'll go over these in details here. But I'll talk about existing system, resource options, I'll highlight some scenario drivers, and lastly, just talk about how we make it specific to each utility by introducing financial rate information. So we populate our tool. We want to start by populating our tool with existing system operating characteristics. So what does this mean? You need information that helps both the production costing function, like heat rates, fuel cost, start times, ramp rates, and also you want information that helps in your expansion planning portion, like capital expenditures and construction profiles. And here I've kind of touched on some of the other major inputs that you can include into your modeling. And of course, the more information you have, the more specific you can mimic your existing system and how it operates. Also, to meet that need identified in the load forecast, you need a set of resource options. So again, like Scott talked about in the resource planning portion of this presentation, you can have thermal resources, like base load, like an IGCC, a nuclear, or an ultra supercritical unit. You might also want to introduce a couple of intermediate options, like an NGCC. And then you might also want to toss in a couple of peaking units, like combustion turbines, or aeroderivatives, like the jet engines he referred to in his presentation. And also, you might want to incorporate some energy efficiency as a resource option, and this could be in the form of commercial or residential. This, again, could be programs like HVAC, lighting, or insulation programs. Also, some other resource options are wind, solar, kind of those are self-explanatory. And then lastly, we've introduced some grid optimization. I know INEV, for example, has a form of grid optimization, like a voltage control that helps the system operate more effectively. And along with these resource options, you want to have information like operating characteristics for one, just to see how these units operate. But then to help in the resource planning function, you need to have build cost and construction profiles. And these are used to determine which kinds of resources are selected. So then I think I've seen this across the other presentations, and we all seem to have scenario drivers. So the kind of expansion plan that you develop, your modeling process is driven by these scenario drivers. I talked about earlier, we have a load forecast. You know, typically, utility will have a base load forecast. And you also have the ability to also incorporate sensitivities to that forecast in the form of high and low load scenarios or load sensitivities. And then also commodity prices. I mean, this is kind of determining what kind of resource you're going to add. And again, utility will start off with a base, and then commodity prices are the coal, gas, market energy prices. INM, for example, has a base, high and low. If we also incorporate a couple other ones, like a no carbon view and a high carbon view into our analysis. And then lastly, we have environmental regulation. This is a big driver here. What changes do you need to incorporate into your existing system to kind of meet that need? Or in your new resource additions, I mean, what kind of characteristics do you need to try to incorporate? Like Scott mentioned earlier on the combustion turbines, he had a couple of flavors of those. So you might want to introduce one with a carbon sequestration or one that's just a conventional CC. So here's where we have the ability to model utility-specific information. Here's a snapshot of two different tools and some of their input options here. As you can see, we have one of the options to make it utility-specific is the discount rate, and that is a rate to determine the present value of future cash flows. Another utility-specific input is the weighted average cost of capital, and that is the rate that the company is expected to pay on average to finance its assets. And here I want to highlight another, not necessarily financial rate information, but I'll talk about this later on, is the ability to incorporate end effects into your modeling and how to capture those recovery of costs that kind of fall outside your study plan. So I'll talk in more detail in a later slide here. This is just some of the financial rate information that you can model with some of your tools. So long-term resource models utilize the objective function, which was to minimize the least cost, minimize the net present value of forward-looking cost, and also abide by other constraints. The hard constraint, for example, could be like the minimum reserve margin set by the local RTO. That's one constraint. Another possible constraint is just, what kind of limits do you have to put on your generators to be compliant with SO2 and NOx targets? And this is kind of where, in the resource modeling world, we say art meets science, where you need to use some kind of reasonable judgment on the kind of additions that you want to add and how many of those. I'm talking about like how many maybe peaking units built. I mean, you can, in order to have your tool solve, you need to be able to kind of guide it and kind of constrain it in a way that you don't kind of choke things off, but you also have the ability for allow the model to solve. So you might want to maybe limit your amount of peaking units to 10 or so. I mean, obviously, if you needed a lot bigger number, you might want to add something like a combined cycle. But just using some kind of judgment there where you try to kind of rein in the options in the model in order to have it solved. So here's just an illustration of how this whole resource modeling process works. For example, here on the far left, you have your inputs. And we'll just assume that maybe perhaps this is the base commodity scenario. So you have your base commodity forecast, you have associated emission forecasts with that, your cost of carbon and NOx and SO2. You also want to have a specific load forecast. In this case, you can say it's the base forecast. And in order to meet your need, you need to introduce resource options. So these inputs then feed into your tool. Your tool is then being steered by the objective function and any other constraints. So you mash the button, and then you hope that when you come back on Monday that your model has solved. Because realistically, I mean, it has the potential to not solve if you give it too many options. So when you show back up on Monday, you find that the model did solve, and it selected a plan. Along with that plan, the model has also produced the associated production capital cost of those resource additions. So the information from having the model solved, typically in some sort of proprietary form, in order to display that information, and I'll just go into detail here. I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. I can go back here for a second. So remodel has solved, and you created an optimal plan under this specific set of assumptions. So different models can provide multiple plans for each error analyzed. But out of all those plans, there is only one optimal plan, the least cost plan. That plan is represented by the CPWE or the PVRR, the present value of revenue requirements. Along with that present value of revenue requirements are the components that to create that present value of revenue requirements, like the production costing components, variable O&M, fixed O&M, along with the resource planning function components, like the recovery of investments on generation additions. So your model has solved, and you come back on Monday, and you can look through your model just to see what that output information is. And here I just kind of give an example of, here's a screenshot of strategist, for example. You can see where I've queried down on the left here, left grid here. It's like a tree-like structure where I've queried down field data, and I've been able to isolate total cost by unit. So while this is very informative on how your individual units operate, so this was strategist. Here's just another example. This is Flexo, and similar style, just kind of query down fuel forecast and then fuel cost by year. So again, while this information, it's a lot of detail, you need to kind of consolidate this information in a form that is useful for decision makers. So here's an example of some model output for one resource plan. It's called Plan A, and this is just from 16 to 30. But as you can see, in your selection of the plan to meet your needs, you've been able to see your fuel cost. That's the cost of generating your units out into the market, your variable O&M cost, emission cost, and annualized build cost. So again, these are your production costing components as well as resource planning function components. That is then netted out against pool revenue. That is revenue created by your units generated out into the market. So the netting of those two components. I'm sorry, is there a question on the phone? Okay. Okay. So then this thing calculates a revenue requirement. But how does the utility...
Could whoever's on the phone, could you please mute it? We're getting some background noise. Go ahead, Ishmael.
Okay, sorry. So while this is information for one plan for the utility, how does the utility use this information to kind of compare it against other plans? So here's an example of an I&M summary. This just happens to be a high event commodity pricing scenario, and we have three distinct plans here. So the way we do it is just we kind of break out the components, again, trying to bucketize those into the production costing components, like in the form of fuel cost, emission cost, and then also the recovery of new additions in the form of new build capital, and then new build program costs in case, you know, we do add energy efficiency or other renewables. That is then, we also take into consideration any bilateral contracts, like the ones that Bill and Matt talked, or Bill and Paul talked about in their presentation. Then that is then netted out against the market revenue, essentially bidding our units into the system, and the revenue they generate. And then because the plans have a potential to be kind of lumpy or chunky, where you don't necessarily kind of stay within your resource or reserve margin the whole time. If you add, you know, big resources, you might have excess capacity. We go ahead and value that capacity in the form of ICAP value here. So then we come up to the revenue requirements. And then this in particular example is from 16 to 45. And we consider that our study period, 16 to 45. And then what if you had an addition in one of the latter years, like 2044, you want to be able to recover that production and capital expenditure of that resource. So we would do that in the form of end effects here. So the sum of those two comes up with the PVRR or CPW, as we call it. So you can kind of see under each of those plans how they look. And of course, each of those plans has a distinct set of additions, so you kind of can rank them side by side. another way of incorporating risk modeling into resource planning scenario or resource modeling process. Well, as identified earlier, you have the ability to have different commodity prices. This is one form of capturing some sort of risk by displaying your multiple views of the world. And this is done in the deterministic view, where you create an optimal plan under each of those views. Those plans under each of those views then create a present value of revenue requirements. You kind of see how those stack up against each other, and I'll provide an example in the following slide. Another approach is the probabilistic approach, and whereas in the deterministic view, you're kind of limited by the number of commodity pricing scenarios or sensitivities, here you allow the model to kind of identify those drivers and create iterations or runs for you. INM, for example, we run 100 iterations. Those iterations are basically the equivalent of having one model run under one scenario view. So the model then calculates a PVRR for each of those iterations or runs, and then I'll display in the next slide here how we determine the revenue at risk. So here's what I was referring to in the deterministic view. So as you can see here, under low commodity pricing, we develop a low plan or low optimal plan. Under the low commodity pricing scenarios, if you go across on that top line there, the low plan should be the least cost across those other, compared to the other plans created under other scenarios. So a utility then would kind of look at, okay, how does this plan that has these resources work if we were to introduce it into a high band pricing scenario or a high band commodity pricing scenario? So you kind of can take a look at, see what kind of resource additions and how they impact under the different worldviews. INN uses both of these modeling options, and then the probabilistic form, we take a look at the 50th and 95th coincident factor. 50th coincident factor is the average or the mean that the plan is likely to happen, or this view is likely to happen, and the 95th is kind of like the worst case scenario. So then here I've kind of identified three distinct plans here, and the delta between the 50th and the 95th is how riskier the plan is. Higher the delta between the 50th and 95th just tells the utility how risky that particular plan is in those additions. So how does resource modeling fit or determine help determine the preferred plan? Well, we've incorporated all the different inputs. We've talked about how there are different worldviews. You've given it the tool, different options to select from. So a utility will then kind of look at those plans under each of those scenarios or commodity price assumptions and just see what kind of similar elements kind of come up again and kind of under some sort of risk analysis show the most robustness. So you identify that information, and then you can also get input from stakeholders through the stakeholder process, what kind of additions they want to see and what kind of view they want to steer the utility towards. So you consider all that. You might also want to consider, you know, upcoming carbon legislation. You know, if you have a particular kind of coal unit on your fleet, what you might want to do to that. So you consider all these different elements. You've identified kind of similarities across plans. You've tested the robustness of those resource additions in those plans. And you kind of provide information to utility decision makers to help kind of come up with this plan that ultimately gets proposed in the integrated resource plan. I think that sums it all up. Do you guys have any questions?
That's great. Yeah, go ahead and write those down. I did mention early this morning